live. It's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Cause every minute, every hour, you'll be shaken by the
strange and mighty power. We're on the eve of week three of college football, at least the big Saturday. We do have a couple of games tonight. Florida State's going to take the field at 5:30. Here in about an hour, they'll also, tonight we get Air Force Wyoming. So a couple of games tonight, but tomorrow we have the big one here in the state of Utah, BYU taking on Oregon. And the Cougars looking to crack the top 10, and win tomorrow may just do that. We're going to talk about BYU, we'll talk a little Utah, we'll talk week three and some storylines around the college football world. Joining us as he does every week, we have Antoine Staley of Athlon Sports. Antoine, great to get you back on today.
Right, definitely with you again.
Definitely. Let's start by talking about BYU. That was the big story. Sunday morning, they closed it out against Baylor. It was one of those football games where I hope everyone in the state stayed awake to watch. I couldn't take my eyes off of this game. I mean, it was blunder after blunder, big play after big play. It kind of had a little bit of everything. But BYU picks up a win at home in one of the most important home games that they have played in a very long time, definitely since going independent. And now, back to a conversation that you and I had, Antoine, at the beginning of the season. If they could run the table early on throughout the month of September, you would hear the chit-chat of BYU playoff talk picking up. They're in that spot. They're sitting in a great place right now at number 12, and now they go on the road this week against Oregon. Last time we saw this team, they were dominated, to say the least. A great spot for BYU.
Yeah, seriously, I mean, coming off that double overtime victory against Baylor last weekend at home, and now you're on the road facing a Pac-12 opponent. But, you know, BYU has had a lot of success against Pac-12 opponents recently. They're 5-0. They went 5-0 last season. But, you know, I don't know if that's an indication of, you know, how this game might particularly go. But, you know, it is an indication that BYU, you know, does not fear the Pac-12 or any of the teams in it. So even if, you know, home or away. So I definitely think it's going to be a really good challenge. I'm curious to see how Oregon is going to, you know, respond, especially considering, you know, how badly they got blown out and pretty embarrassed against Georgia. I think people thought they would lose, but just not in the manner that they did. So it's another primetime game for Oregon, this time at home. You know, a chance to prove that, hey, we're not as bad as what we looked against Georgia. So I'm curious to see, you know, how Bo Nix really especially responds, you know, against the quality BYU squad.
Yeah, I think if BYU gets past Oregon tomorrow night, we can look at the Cougars and say, you know what, this may be the toughest schedule in the country through three games, and they're 3-0. I think that's a legitimate argument. Like, if you want to bring that to the table, wins against Baylor, wins against Oregon, and then even their opener, right, against South Florida. Like, if you really wanted to bring that argument to the table, it's legitimate if they can get past the Ducks tomorrow night.
Yeah, you're not playing, like, you know, these are not cupcake things. I know South Florida's a team in transition, but, you know, they're still in a, you know, particularly major conference in the American. But, you know, the Baylor, you know, win, especially at home with bit time. If you go on the road and you beat Oregon, you know, no matter, you know, what state Oregon is, you know, as far as a program, going to Autzen Stadium is no small task. So if they were able to go there and, you know, defeat the Ducks there, I mean, they definitely got to, I think they're going to get people's attention, too, as well. So, and there's no reason to think why, you know, especially what I've seen, they can't go at least 6-0 until they play Arkansas next month, too, who Arkansas is ranked 10th in the country. So, yeah, I definitely think they're going to look to try to get people's attention. And, you know, if they go 6-0, then look out, as you talked about, I definitely think, you know, they may have a case to, you know, be in that conversation for, you know, a college football playoff.
Yeah, I think if they were to run the table, and this is why BYU is in such a good spot right now. I know a lot of people in the state really believe they should be top 10 in the country. That doesn't really matter at this stage. When you're number 12 and you still have notable opponents as an independent on your schedule in the middle of September, you're in fine shape. And honestly, if you were to beat Oregon, beat Notre Dame at a neutral site, beat Arkansas, there's no way you could keep them out. Really, there isn't.
Yeah, I would think not. Although, you know, stranger things have happened, especially when you talk about committee and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, they definitely have the case too as well. Obviously, I think, you know, I think Baylor's going to be a good quality team. So no matter how, you know, they shake out, I think that'll be a, you know, a good notch on their belt. You know, it'll be interesting to see how Oregon plays the rest of the season there as well, because, you know, they have some tough games coming up there between, you know, now BYU and then next week at Washington State. So, yeah, I definitely think playing their quality opponents that they have, especially early on in the year where a lot of teams play a lot of, you know, weaker opponents, I definitely have to commend them for doing that.
Antoine, let's talk about another team that is now inside the top 25 in the Texas Longhorns under Steve Sarkisian. Last week, we talked about the idea of just staying competitive with Alabama. Not only was Texas competitive, they should have beat Alabama. I thought that, for the most part, they outplayed Alabama. They had some really solid missed opportunities, and of course, you can't do that to a Nick Saban-led team. Nonetheless, they had, at that time, the number one team on the ropes and couldn't come up with a couple of big defensive stops. That's exactly what Texas needed. However, you get that little mindset back. You have people talking. You have a couple of top 10 opponents still on your schedule. Easy one tomorrow against UTSA, but nonetheless, you have to take care of business. I mean, it has to be similar to what we saw week one, right, against Louisiana Monroe. They need to win this game by putting up 50-plus. You have to send a message.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're playing against a UTSA opponent team that, you know, darn near beat the Houston Cougars week one. So, you know, I hope the Texas Longhorns were paying attention to that, because this is definitely a team that can put up a lot of points and pretty fast as well. I know Texas has a lot of injuries, obviously starting at the quarterback position, but, you know, you got Robinson, the top running back. You also have their cornerback, Jamison, who is also nursing an ankle injury. You know, all kind of, you know, I think Sarkisian said they were day-to-day currently right now. But, yeah, I mean, they coming off with a big emotional win. I mean, a big emotional loss, against Alabama, a game you should have won. And so I'm curious to see how they will respond to that. Some teams are just, you know, kind of go down in the dumps there. I remember Florida played Alabama really tough last year, and then, you know, that was kind of really the peak of their season and ended up having, you know, slumping the rest of the way. Texas has to, you know, be mindful that despite that, despite them not getting the win against Alabama, they cannot let that define the rest of their season.
Yeah, I think we can kind of piggyback and talk about Alabama here. Anytime Alabama is either A, in a game that comes down to the wire, or B, they lose, we always start talking about is the gap closing, because this, of course, is the pillar of consistency in college football. I've always thought that talk was premature. Watching this game against Texas on Saturday, I did see some things that say, okay, the gap is closing a little bit. And I think there's a lot to contribute. It's not saying that Nick Saban is falling off. It's simply stating that, hey, the game of college football, the landscape is changing, and it's changing drastically. And I think we can point to Texas A&M being upset last week to Appalachian State. We can point to Marshall going into South Bend and beating Notre Dame. We can talk about Texas kind of closing the gap, at least from a power perspective in the trenches. The game of college football is just simply changing with the transfer portal and the NILs, and I think that was on display Saturday.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Yeah, I just think that when, you know, you have the transfer portal, and like you said, NIL, and, you know, I think these players have other opportunities to play at other schools that, you know, get playing time early that they may not receive at other schools. I mean, Alabama is loaded. I mean, you know, they put out tons of NFL talent each and every year, but not every, you know, kid wants to wait three or four years just to play. So maybe you go to a school like Appalachian State, or, you know, you go to East Carolina, or whatever the case may be, and you play right away, and you still, you know, have a shot to make it into the NFL potentially. But yeah, I think, you know, I don't, like I said, I just think kind of what you alluded to, it's not that, you know, Nick Saban has lost his touch or anything. I just think that, you know, you just don't have the depth in college football as far as rosters like he once had, even, you know, like 10 years ago. I think the depth is substantially different there. It might be, you know, obviously Alabama's loaded. Probably their second or third team could beat a lot of schools' first teams. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, these kids want to play right away, and, you know, they, you know, want to go to, you know, exercise their opportunities to do so. And, you know, you're going to see some of these smaller schools be able to get these top transfers that are in the portal.
Yeah, and I think looking at what Georgia has, who is now the number one team in the country, and I don't think anyone can argue that this is the best team in college football right now. The way they manage, Kirby Smart managed to reload defensively after losing the amount of talent that he lost in last year's NFL draft. That is going to become a rarity, right, in college football. I mean, the idea of Alabama having, you know, Nick Saban having his pick at the top three from any position in the country, I think it's similar to what we saw in college basketball. If I can reference Geno at UConn, there was once upon a time where he's picking basically the top four or five from every position. Basketball, a different game, but I think the concept does translate. translate. What Georgia has done this year is absolutely phenomenal when we talk about the current state of college football.
Yeah, I mean, to kind of go back to what you said about UConn, I mean, when's the last time they won a college championship, college national championship in women's basketball?
Yep.
It's been a little while.
It has.
That usually does not happen to them. You know, kind of the same thing. Even before, you know, Gino Auriemma, you know, you had Pat Summitt, and Tennessee was doing the same thing. They were loading up on college, you know, women wanting to come there too as well. At some point, you know, the playing field starts to level out a little bit because people realize, hey, you know what? You know, in order to, you know, maybe get some playing time or in order to kind of beat these opponents, we need to do things differently. You know, I think to say, yeah, you're going to have Georgia and Alabama up at the top too, but, you know, I think you're going to have teams like Ohio State. You're going to have, you know, if Notre Dame could, you know, get out of the hole that they're in, I think they'll be fine too. And some of these other schools, you're going to have some of these players are going to have other opportunities to go different places while still being able to achieve their dreams of making it to the NFL. You know, not everybody, you know, can play at Alabama or Georgia, but, you know, it's great that they, you know, able to reload and, you know, come back and be one of the top two or three teams in the country. But, you know, you're going to continue to have depths being spread out around college football.
Antoine, I got to get your perspective on Scott Frost. You and I spent a good 10 minutes talking about this to start the season and the idea that Scott Frost needed to win 7-8 games maybe to keep his job at Nebraska. I know we both agreed he was on the hot seat. I don't know that either one of us could have predicted that he would have been gone moving into really week three of the college season. And I think what even adds to this is that Nebraska could have waited two more weeks, saved about $8 million in his buyout. They didn't want to do that. They wanted to get rid of Scott Frost right now. So the first major domino in the potential coaching carousel in college football falls in September. Shouldn't have been a surprise following the loss to Georgia Southern, but still, I don't know that too many could have predicted by week three he'd be gone.
Yeah, I thought the Oklahoma game, I thought he might be fired after that because, you know, obviously, no Oklahoma and Nebraska, you know, old school rivalry dating back many, many decades. And, you know, I thought Oklahoma had a chance to, if they embarrass Nebraska, especially at home, I thought that might have did them in. But, you know, losing to Georgia Southern, I think that kind of, you know, tops that, you know, embarrassment a little bit more. But, yeah, I thought when the hire was first made with Scott Frost, you know, I thought everybody thought, yeah, you know, it's a homecoming for him. He won, you know, a national championship in Nebraska as the starting quarterback and, you know, had some success at UCF. But it's just it's a tough place to win. It's a tough place to play. And, you know, I'm curious to see who they try to bring in there and, you know, try to right that ship a little bit because things have changed in college football. I mean, Nebraska, you know, it's been 25 years since they've really been, you know, relevant in college football, you know, since the Frank Solich years. But, you know, are they more like a program like an Iowa or Wisconsin, you know, in that mode? Or does somebody can come in there and try to compete for a national championship similar to, you know, like the opponent that they're playing like in Oklahoma? So I think they kind of have to look themselves in the mirror and kind of decide what this program is going to be moving forward.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about Nebraska, they fall in line with a grip of other colleges. And I think, again, we'll stick with this angle of the landscape is just simply changing. And I think that we can relate this to, we'll say, a school like Utah, right? A team that is just simply on the cusp. They're so close. Year in and year out, over the last 3-4 years, they have just been so close, on the cusp. I think there are a grip of programs that we can group in that same realm that have to figure out a way to get over the hump. And I don't necessarily know what the answer is. And I could put Nebraska in that category. In fact, I think you can put a grip of maybe 20, 25 of these Power 5 schools that are close and have had some sort of breakthrough. And then you can also group in the ones that, A, have the financial means and have the facilities. And I think that's where Nebraska falls in.
Yeah, I think so. Like, yeah, I really feel like they could be like an Iowa or Wisconsin. I think programs that have had success, they might win 10 or 11 games, you know, every now and then. And Iowa played for the Big Ten Championship last year. So, yeah, I think they could, you know, it's no reason why Nebraska can't be in that same mode either. I just think that, you know, they dominated, especially under Tom Osborne. They had such a dominant program in the 80s and 90s when I was growing up. And, you know, the option kind of, triple option kind of fizzled out in college football. And, you know, they tried to adapt, bringing Bill Callahan and, you know, other coaches in there at the same time. And it just hadn't worked out for whatever reason. And then it's hard getting you know, recruits to come to Lincoln, Nebraska in the middle of nowhere, especially if you're trying to get, you know, 4- and 5-star recruits. But, yeah, I somehow, you know, I was making it work. You know, Minnesota and the Big Ten, they're making it work. Wisconsin's making it work. And I just think that Nebraska, you know, has to find a way. And I think they will if they hire the right guy to make it work in this day and age.
Antoine Staley, again of Athlon Sports, taking out the time to join us. Antoine, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. Love talking college football with you. Before I let you go, please give us more info on where we can find your work, be it college or the NFL, and the work you're doing with the Jets.
You can find me at Antoine Staley on Twitter, and, you know, find my work at the New York Daily News covering the Jets, and also at Athlon Sports.
Always a pleasure. Can't wait for next week. Thanks, Antoine.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. It's here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.